You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. In July, the new federally mandated crisis hotline 988 launched. And despite the great promise of the program, there were concerns that 988 was ill-prepared to handle a massive influx of calls at the time of its launch. Here with me to talk about how it's going is Dan Gorenstein, executive producer and co-host of the podcast Trade-Offs. Dan, thanks for coming back on The Takeaway with us.
Melissa, thanks so much for having me. Really psyched to be here.
Now, we did talk with you a few days before 988 went live, and you really did sort of give us this sense that there was enormous potential. Has that potential been realized? Sort of how are you assessing it right now?
Sure. Talked to a couple folks around the country, both at the national and the state level this week, Melissa, and I got one quote from a source saying many numbers are pointed in the right direction. And, you know, we've seen nationally, federal numbers are suggesting a 35 to 40% increase in overall demand, going from like 260,000 calls pre-launch of 988 to 375,000 calls. So that's encouraging. And there's this one set of numbers, Melissa, that I want to share with you, which really sort of captures the spirit of the optimism, at least that's out there, which is like around the number of texts. So pre-launch in June of 2022, there were 7,300 texts. 96% of those were answered, but it took on average 6 minutes and 47 seconds for someone to respond. Now, fast forward to November, and there are 53,000 texts, so a huge explosion. The answer rate went up from 96% to 99%, and the average time to respond, 54 seconds. Now, before we go crazy,
is huge.
Yeah. It's enormous, right? But at the same time, and I know you know this, a lot can go wrong in 54 seconds if someone is in crisis. So while this is progress, no one I spoke to this week is like, our job is done.
It's so interesting you use the word optimism, and in a certain way I get that, right? If 54 seconds can be life-saving, surely 5 minutes can be life-saving, relational-saving, sense of self-saving, right? I mean, I'm not sure if I took 6 minutes to respond to the, you know, texts of some of my friends, family, you know, even if they weren't in crisis, they would think, why is it taking so long to respond? I'm wondering, though, if that increase gives us not a sense of optimism, but of pessimism that there is still such need.
I mean, absolutely, there is need. And I think, you know, you can read this huge increase in demand as an example of the fact that there is, in fact, so much need, right? Like, again, to use that number, just because I know numbers can be hard on the radio, 260,000 to 375,000. And don't forget, 988 has not really had some sort of national publicity blitz yet, right? So there's no huge national awareness that 988 is really up and running. And so already you're seeing a huge explosion in demand for these services. And I think, I don't know about you, but in my mind, the pandemic has really put mental health on the map in our country in a way that I'm 48 years old. I've never seen it like this before.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break right here, but stick with us. We've got more Takeaway in just a moment.
Every memory you think you have of the past.
The house you grew up in. Your first kiss.
It's not simply an idea. It's a physical trace left in your brain.
I own those memories. They define me.
But what happens when those memories are stolen from you?
In the blink of an eyelid.
Can you imagine what to have one night 20 years long? That's what it's been like. Just like death.
Memory and Forgetting on Radiolab. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We're speaking with Dan Gorenstein about how the 988 Crisis Hotline program is faring since its launch in July. Dig in with me for a second on this point you're making, Dan, about the pandemic, and connect that with the text, because presumably folks who are texting are demographically different than folks who are calling in.
I think it's very clear that people who are texting. There are a lot of young people in this moment who are experiencing crisis, whether that's with substance use, that could be with just mental health problems. And the fact that texting is an option here with 988, the fact that chatting, like going online to communicate, is an option, is seen by advocates of 988 as a real win, because they understand that young people aren't necessarily going to even want to pick up the phone, that the phone actually having a conversation can alienate younger people. So I think that there's a real excitement and enthusiasm that there are multiple channels out there for people to be able to contact social service help.
There's another aspect of the making the phone calls. Can you share with me that story about kind of the fear of calling 911?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know that advocates are collecting some stories. And one story comes from a mother in New York State who has a son with serious mental illness, someone who cycles in and out of crisis. And I get almost choked up thinking about this, to be honest with you. For the first time, she did not have fear of calling for help. In the past, she had been trying 911 and she always had the reservations. And this time she was like, I can do this and I'm not as afraid. And you know, one of my sources said to me, like, look, the whole point of 988 is so people in crisis and mental health crisis are not treated like a criminal, that something is wrong with them, and that the hope, right, the promise of 988 is that lots more people can start to feel that way.
Part of that, it seems to me also, in terms of the response, we're talking about the response time, we're talking about the mode of response. Can you also talk to me about cultural competency of the response, of having, for example, people who are responding in languages other than English, or who are from the communities where calls and texts are coming in from? Sort of how well staffed is 988 relative to those concerns?
So I think staffing in general is going all right. We have talked with some folks who across the country that staffing is better, but not fixed. Somebody in Iowa I talked to this week was talking about 80% of her staff is up and running, but someone in West Virginia said only 2/3 of their call line is staffed adequately. I think in terms of cultural competency, we're seeing different communities handle that differently. I've seen other reporting to suggest that somewhere in the Pacific Northwest has Indigenous people answering calls for Indigenous responders. So you're seeing some of that happen. You're seeing Spanish language options emerge for people. So I think there's a real awareness among these providers that cultural competency is a must. I also know, though, that there are real financial challenges, and that some states, if they don't have adequate resources, sometimes have to consider options like outsourcing calls from their state to other states. And that doesn't play well. You know, I think people are really worried that if someone's calling in crisis, you want to be able to respond to that person immediately and with services and with knowledge. And that knowledge is both logistical, but it's also the cultural competency you're talking about. But we all know that that takes resources. And heretofore, we haven't seen the kind of real investment yet that 988 needs to really flourish.
Dan Gorenstein is the executive producer and co-host of the podcast Trade-Offs. Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Melissa, thanks so much for having me.